Ladies and gentlemen, we're back with Pop Culture Ninja with Nathan and Nathan. Nathan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing terrific. It is great, wonderful weather here in Baltimore. Nice summer weather, warm, breezy.
Dude, it was beautiful. You and I were just talking yesterday, because on These Go to 11, did an interview with Zach Bartles talking about cigars. And I was saying, man, I'm disappointed because the Baltimore weather jumped from like nasty, rainy, cold weather to blazing hot and humid. And I really haven't had time to just kind of sit outside and enjoy a nice cigar. And I think I'm going to do that tonight after we're finished up. It's a perfect evening for it. Got a nice breeze going. And
it totally is, yeah.
So I'm excited about that. Also excited about these two beers we're going to review. The first one, I'm just going to give a shout out real quick to Stillwater. They do some great stuff. And we just tried their Nootropic, N-U-Tropic. It's a IPA with mango and passion fruit. You and I tried it. Really kind of hoppy.
Very hoppy.
Yeah, almost to the point where you don't get the mango and the passion fruit as much as you probably want coming out of it. Something I would say about it, you know, you don't want to be drinking it cold. I think if you drink it too cold, then you're going to be missing out on some of the nuances of the flavor. I just put it in the fridge before you got here, Nate, so probably about an hour it was sitting in there.
It was cooler than room temperature, but it wasn't cold, it wasn't ice cold, or anything like that.
So, you know, I mean, I enjoyed it. You got hints of that mango and passion fruit, but it wasn't overwhelming in there. It's definitely a nice hoppy beer for those who like IPAs. It's Stillwater, so, you know, they get my thumbs up. Your thoughts on it?
Well, when we poured it, it was definitely very foamy. There's a lot of foam going on. That's probably because partly the room temperature, and it's in a can, so you're pouring out of a can. I will say the can has this weird, mesmerizing art. It's just in my line of sight right now, so I'm almost looking at it like it's a magic eye picture. Yeah. It's just like Andy Warhol, snaky-looking pattern on the side. It's a very, like, let's face it, it's a yuppie-looking can.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is very hoppy. It's actually so hoppy, like you said, that you don't really get the mango until it's, like, underneath. And the mango flavor is good, but it's weird because it's like you took a shandy and an IPA and just mixed them together. Yeah. It's kind of strange. I don't know that I would gravitate towards it normally. The flavors were good, but I kind of didn't want the hops to be there, if that makes sense, like this particular drink.
Sure. But we do have a second one here that you really dug into, Schafferhofer grapefruit beer. Schafferhofer, y'all. What did you think about that one?
This is awesome. I love this. This was one of the I had in my hand a few weeks ago, and then I saw the Not Your Father's vanilla cream, so I grabbed that instead. This is really good. This is grapefruit beer, so it's not typically, I'm used to the grapefruit shandies. I think a few years ago you turned us on to those. I think UFO has one, or Harpoon has one, and then the one that you turned us on to is Traveler, which has some great shandies. They have a really, I'll give a shout out to them, they have a great collection of shandies. I think there's like a pineapple one now too, and that is super good. They're all really good, particularly the grapefruit. And the nice thing about those shandies, they're very you can tell the natural, like, fruitiness is there. And with a shandy, that's kind of its defining feature. The weird thing about the grapefruit beer is it's even more significant in the real grapefruit flavor than any of the shandies. But still having that beer, it's not really sweet.
Right.
It's very, it's almost like you just squeeze the grapefruit right into the beer. It's pretty awesome. This is like a, you know, a perfect summer drink. It's like you got the wheat beer, and then you've got this really strong, I mean, you have to like grapefruit. You really do.
Yeah. But it's good because it's not, I didn't feel like it was overly bitter like some grapefruit drinks are. It did have a nice sweetness naturally coming through it.
Yeah, it isn't. It neither element overpowers each other, which I think is, that was probably one of our things. We drank this first, and going from this to the Stillwater, you had two things clashing, and here you have two things melding together, I think, really well. It's it's awesome, as far as I'm concerned.
Very cool. So check them out. We have the Stillwater Nootropic, and we have the Schafferhofer Grapefruit.
And if you like Shandy's, check out the Traveler.
Traveler, there. Absolutely. Yep, very cool. So we're going to go ahead. We're going to be spending the majority of the podcast talking about Warcraft. But first, Nathan, you went and saw The Conjuring on Monday night. And give us your thoughts and feelings on that one.
The Conjuring 2.
Conjuring 2,
yes. So this is
the
sequel to the movie that came out in 2013, a horror movie directed by James Wan, who is known or notorious for the Saw movies and the Insidious movies that followed after that. And Insidious was sort of a modern playoff of The Poltergeist from about 1982. And Conjuring kind of fell in that same vein. It was released in the summer, towards the end of the summer, ended up being a big hit. And it was definitely like this sort of spook house, haunted house, roller coaster ride. If you really had to like horror movies, but it was an enjoyable movie with a lot of kind of shivery fun. It melded a haunted house movie with a possession theme. Mm-hmm. And it was rated R. And yet I think that one of the things that helped propel it forward was that R rating was really for the scariness and intensity in the film, not for language or explicit situations or even for violence, really just the intensity of the movie, which I think opened it up for a larger audience that usually attends these sorts of movies. The other thing about it was based off of Ed and Lorraine Warren, who are known or infamous for being involved with the Amityville Horror, which is in the 70s, it was a very popular case of a true life, guys, you should see my air quotes,
yes,
true life haunting situation. The Warrens were sort of self-proclaimed demonologists, which is not to say that they were fans of demons, but rather were associated with the Catholic Church in battling demons and sussing out supernatural activity. This was the 70s, of course, and the 70s was like, demons were like Tootsie Rolls, you know, everything I think I see becomes demonic activity, you know. So the movie, my walking into that original movie and thinking, I'll be perfectly honest and upfront here, seeing the Warrens as shysters, really, given kind of the evidence we have and the information we have, that's not to discount anyone in regards to things of the spiritual realm, but rather specifically the case with the Warrens, it's questionable, I think. And so I walked through this movie wondering if I could set that aside. And in the first Conjuring, I was able to do that and engage it as a movie. That's really down to Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, who play the Warrens. The Hollywood version of the Warrens, they're the sort of like, on one hand, they are a strong marital unit, and then on the other hand, they're also the sort of kick-butt demon hunters who come in halfway through the movie. You know, the kind of thing we always like to see in these sorts of movies, going all the way back to Zelda Rubinstein in Poltergeist. Mm-hmm. The movie also had a really nice family center to it with the family that was being haunted in that movie. And particularly Lily Taylor was really strong as the wife. And in that movie, there was also a strong sense of the Warrens as people of strong faith, which I think the first time I was ever on These Go to 11, I mentioned how sometimes Christians only get like their due in horror movies where they have to come in and fight the demon, so they can't afford to be, you know, hypocrites or the shysters or the usual thing that we see in a movie. So it was nice to see a positive portrayal of Christians in that film. The second film comes along, and of course the worry would be that it's going to be so much of a retread of what happened before that it just becomes kind of stale. Because even The Conjuring wasn't new, it just threw a lot of familiar elements together in such a way that we hadn't seen it in maybe 10 or 15 years.
Sure.
And so it felt kind of fresh. And Nathan, how do you feel about horror movies in general?
Yeah, you and I were talking about this. I'm not a fan, not so much because I think there's anything wrong with them or anything like that. First of all, I divide all horror movies into two classes. This is being very generic, but these are my two classes of horror movies. You have the spiritual, demonic, scary, ghost.
Supernatural.
Thank you. Yeah, supernatural horror movies. Or you have the psychotic killer horror movies.
Or real world, you could say like the reality-based horror.
Yeah, serial killer, you know, those type of things. For me, when I watch the supernatural movies, it's such a deviation from what I think the reality of it is that I just don't get into it. It's a lot of them tend to be very gory and bloody and nonsensical. And so for me, it's kind of like, I can stand a lot of blood and gore if there's a purpose behind it. But I mean, other than, and honestly, even in a comedic movie, I mean, there are some movies out there that take comedic licenses with doing that sort of things. And I can almost even appreciate it. In
anything Sam Raimi has his name on.
Yeah, exactly. But and then as far as like the realistic, like person slasher movies, I have difficulty with that because I have so much martial arts training under my belt that I look at those movies and I'm like, that's stupid. Why would anyone do that? And I can't appreciate just the movie for the sake of the movie. I think Scream did the closest job at looking at a movie and being like, yeah, all these things are ridiculous. And it was, you know, self-identifying as being ridiculous, but it was cool because it was in a sense almost breaking the fourth wall and everything it was doing.
Scream was a movie for people that either were sick and tired of or didn't right. like in the first place slasher movies.
Right. And so it really had an appeal to it. I mean, and that's not to say that there aren't horror movies that I enjoy. We talked about Sam Raimi, you know, the Army of Darkness stuff. And there's a comedic element that goes on that I can appreciate in those movies.
Well, those movies are really like Three Stooges,
yes.
sort of slapstick antics with some horror laid
yeah,
on over
exactly.
the top, to be fair. Well, we're going to have to expand your horizons and horror.
Yeah.
There's definitely more than the two types you mentioned, but I agree that those two types that you did identify are really kind of played out, particularly mm-hmm. these days. And I can appreciate that for anyone coming to movies like this expecting, you know, the horror genre tends to get a pretty bad rap. That's mostly self-inflicted because mm-hmm. there's so much stuff that's poured into it that isn't really of quality. There was and I say great with sort of a few asides that I'll mention in a minute, but I thought a great movie that came out this year was The Witch, David Eggers' mm-hmm. The Witch. It's a really intense movie. It's a very creepy and challenging movie. Mm-hmm. I think that it has a lot to offer if you're willing to engage it. It had some unfortunate earlier in the year, you know, I think the Satanic Church or something named it like their favorite movie something. And in reality, I think watching the film, it is no way has propaganda for Satan. I mean,
sure.
it's a story that is really compelling, very creepy, very dark, very disturbing, but with a purpose to its imagery. Mm-hmm. Its imagery is frightening. It is unsettling, but it's never really over the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different kind of movie. It's not, I think, what most people think of when they come to this genre.
Sure.
And actually, Popcorn Theology and Joe Thorne just did a really good, a really in-depth analysis of that movie from the perspective of someone with faith watching it. So mm-hmm. kind of dispelling this idea that these horror movies don't offer anything intellectually or thoughtful
sure.
or philosophically. Now, that being said, The Conjuring is not that sort of a movie. This does fall within
right.
the base of a summer movie, a kind
sure.
of movie that you go to if you enjoy being scared. And that's
yeah.
That's a big caveat.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy being scared? Because The Conjuring has been made almost specific. Conjuring 2, more so even than the original, is almost wall-to-wall jump scares. And this movie is 131 minutes long. So that is about 2 hours of real intensity. Things jumping out at you, things popping out, things being thrown and flung about. A lot of build-up to these scenes, too, with children looking around the corners and here's the false noise and there's the real noise. And that stuff usually gets very tiring with me.
Sure.
What makes this work in the same way that the original worked, where I'd say they're just about on the same level, are the performances and the writing that helps create the sense of a family in peril.
Mm.
In a lot of horror films, even The Witch included, we see the disintegration or the deterioration of the family unit, mm. which, to be fair, is actually horrifying. That's a
right.
scary concept that almost anybody can get behind. The idea of your family being torn away from you by forces you are not equipped to deal with.
Right.
That's far more scary to me than the slasher chasing
sure.
the girl out front of the Pizza Hut or something.
Right.
So, and what happens with The Conjuring is we get into a story like the first one where you have a family. This is the Hodgsons. And this particular episode also is related to a real, well, again, quote unquote, real scenario that occurred in London this time. So we move over to England. We have the Enfield Haunting, which is another kind of poltergeist, and not a lot of creepy things going on. More possession, weird tape recordings. Little girl is talking like an 80-year-old man with emphysema, you know.
Right.
All the sort of check marks off the genre box. What makes it work, again, is Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, again playing Ed and Lorraine Warren, they come back into this story, and the first movie had a cold opening for the that introduced the evil doll Annabelle, which almost even people who haven't seen that movie know about this creepy doll that is part of the Warren's collection of possessed artifacts, whatever. This one opens with Amityville and does the cold opening for Amityville and then jumps into the movie. What I liked about it is it kind of takes Amityville and pushes it to the side because that's the most well-known. It's the one that's been made several times. So it deals with that and then moves on to this other story that maybe if you were into paranormal events and paranormal history, you might know about this. I wasn't really all that familiar. So the story unfolds. I have very familiar with horror movies, so there was nothing new or surprising in the story.
Right.
But what was effective is, again, the performance of Wilson and Farmiga, who create this, again, really nice presentation of a married couple who also are Christians and who are seeing in a positive light and in a light where their faith matters to them. And when they are confronted with the potential, a vision that one of them may be harmed going into this next case, their decision is to say, well, you know, we trust God when we go forward in this. We can't go forward in anything but God. And we also feel that it is our, you know, our responsibility to help and reach out to these people and assist them. They see the damage being done to the family. They make the decision to trust in God and go forward anyway. And it's a kind of representation, I think, that's appealing whether or not you're a person of faith, because we don't see that much anymore.
Sure.
Put the real world Warrens aside and the question of, you know, well, is this trying to change their image? Maybe, but as a piece of fiction, I get tired of horror movies where the creature, the force, the killer is introduced and then basically becomes fish in a barrel. We're just watching a series of characters we don't care about be decimated.
Right.
And there isn't a force that comes in to reckon with it. A few years ago, I got interview Jason Blum, who is a producer of a lot of these movies, Paranormal Activity and all this, and he was talking about it. And that was my question to him. When are we going to get the one where we have our Ash, we have our hero, who, you know, our Zelda Rubinstein, who comes in and confronts these things? Because most of those movies lack that force to reckon with. And these characters are that force. But the interesting thing is they're also presented as real people who don't come in with a lot of fancy one-liners or a lot of fancy weaponry, but are really people of faith who are just reaching out and trying to help. That's a positive view with all the demon and all the other stuff aside.
Right.
Now, that being said, you're going to go to this for the scares, and it's pretty scary. I will say it's very intense. A 14-year-old could probably handle it if they're into this sort of thing, if they've enjoyed this kind of thing. But this is a no-joke movie. Now, I've apparently developed some form of narcolepsy because about halfway through this movie, we're watching it, and they'd even brought in ahead of time, there was somebody from a local Laurel haunted house or something that had people dressed like ghost girls. So they're wandering up and down the hallway and like sticking their head like in front of the theater seats to kind of freak people out. So they sit down, the movie starts, and about halfway through I hear this kind of guttural, creepy groaning. And then I get nudged in the ribs by the guy, my friend next to me, who says, you know, Nathan, you know, you're snoring and you scared the people behind you. Like 3 seconds of screen time have progressed since I fell asleep. Oh, whoa, that just happened in the middle of these things. Somebody apparently was alarmed, but they thought it was a ghost girls. It was me. So if I fall asleep during the podcast, just gently wake me up. So I would say, if you like the first movie, you'll definitely like this one. It's nice to have a movie that progresses the series and is enjoyable.
Yeah.
And again, if you enjoyed it the first time, you'll probably enjoy it this time, which isn't always a case with sequels. This is probably one of my most satisfying summer movies so far, in the sense that it does deliver on what it promised to deliver. And it will give you sort of those nice sort of flashbacks to movies like Poltergeist. It's not super inventive in terms of being something new, but Juan has grown as a filmmaker. There's a lot of really cool shots and just composition that he does here, and creating a world that exists in a period piece, like in the 70s, and that was true of the first movie. He really captures those times. I will say some of the music choices are kind of cheesy, like he, you know, they flash to London, and we have London Is Calling on the soundtrack, and then the kids walk by a bus stop, and Bus Stop starts playing.
Right,
so
right.
Maybe a little literal on some of the song transitions, but it was really good. I mean, it was even neat last night, Nathan. We went to a different screening,
yeah.
And the guy hosting the screening was talking about how the thing he found refreshing were the Christian characters,
yes,
presented as,
yes,
as a force to be reckoned with, and
yes,
he saw it as a callback to older horror,
yes,
films, you know, the kind where Peter Cushing would come in,
yes,
as Van Helsing and drive back the vampires.
And what was interesting about that is this person in particular was like, you know, I mostly self-identify as an atheist, and he found it to be a refreshing,
yeah,
thing.
And so, I think if you like horror films, you'll like that element. What I was surprised is the characters are good, mm-hmm, and the scares are good. I am just going to make a quick aside just to say, anyone who's watching this, take it as a fantasy in terms,
yeah,
of the things happening in the movie. Again, the elements of positivity are there, are real. Some of the fictional stuff that happens in this movie, I think a logical person would question.
Sure.
Now, the Warrens are out there. Ed has now passed away, but Lorraine is still out there tying herself to the film and talking about their adventures as demon hunters. I would say anyone who sees this, don't decide to go out and cast out demons.
Yeah.
You can visit the Warrens website, which has a very strange musical file that is basically the Gregorian chant version of Green Day's Boulevard,
yes,
of Broken Dreams,
yes, so,
which was by far, I think, scarier than anything I saw on the website,
yeah,
otherwise, except the fact it looked like it was made by GeoCities in 1998.
Right, right.
So take the movie for what it is,
sure,
basically what I'm saying. But if you enjoy horror, check it out.
Very cool. So moving on, Warcraft. Nathan, I think we've come to our first movie that we disagree on in terms of whether or not, you know, we would recommend it for people to see.
We've come to our first movie we disagree on that we've discussed on this podcast.
That's true.
There's probably a great wealth of,
yes, I'm sure there is,
to explore.
Especially since you found out that I enjoyed the movie last night. Warcraft. Yeah, let's just dive right in. Let's go ahead and let's talk about the mess that it was. Because as much as I enjoyed the movie, I am fully willing to admit that there were enough things going on that it was a mess of a movie.
Well, and let's back up even before that.
Sure.
Before I went to the film, mm-hmm, I was kind of trepidatious. We talked about this on our summer preview.
Yes.
Where I said that I was really looking forward to it for really one reason. I know nothing about Warcraft.
Yeah.
So I was intrigued because the director, Duncan Jones, who, again, is son of the late, great David Bowie, but mm-hmm, has developed his own presence as an artist for doing movies like Moon and Source Code, mm-hmm, two really cool science fiction movies that also, in a sense, I don't want to say play games with the audience in a dismissive way, saying, oh, you know, they were just toying with us, but Jones displayed through both of those movies in different ways that I don't want to go into if you haven't seen them, a real sense of how to take a movie and play similar rhythms you'd find in a video game. Mm. Source Code, if you've seen it, you know, has this repeating sense,
yes,
where the same 12 minutes are repeated over and over again, and Jones is interacting with that in a way similar to a video game while still giving you the character beats and drama you expect in a movie. Moon has scenes of Sam Rockwell playing off of Sam Rockwell, playing off of Sam Rockwell,
right,
playing off of Sam Rockwell. You know, almost giving a sense, again, of repeating things over from a different perspective, that idea of what it's like to run through a level with one life and then run through it again with a different life.
Right.
So I thought, given that he was able to accomplish those things in that movie, I was excited to see what he would do with an actual video game, something that he really professes to enjoy and had a passion to do. I just want to say that front, one of the things, I tweeted that on Twitter, and then like, he liked it. I saw that,
right,
after the movie. I was like, okay. So, but what I want to say about this, going into the movie, I was going into it with an open mind,
right,
to engage it for what it was. And I'm going to make a statement, because last week when we watched Ninja Turtles, I said that one of the things that really bothered me about that movie was how it was almost a nothing in terms of, like, I had almost no feeling other than a sort of general disgust that my time had been wasted, or,
yeah,
frustration, should I say, that my time had been wasted with it. And I complained that it doesn't try at all.
Mm-hmm.
I felt the same way about Alice in Wonderland the week before, mm-hmm, Angry Birds. Warcraft is a movie that is trying very hard, and that, I don't even mean that dismissive way, not even that it's not achieving what it's trying to do,
right.
But I don't think you can argue that Duncan Jones doesn't care about Warcraft,
right.
Or that anybody that worked on this movie didn't care about this movie. It sounds weird because this movie was clearly greenlit as an excuse to make money.
Yeah.
But the people that made it care very much, I
right.
think, about the game of Warcraft. And I'm probably inclined to think that the people who really care about Warcraft will enjoy this movie.
Yes.
So we'll just say that going in, and then
sure.
we can go from there. Of course, when the movie started, somebody in our audience screamed, you know, like, for the hordes,
yes.
for the hordes, which eventually just developed into Hodor, Hodor, Hodor.
Right.
But no, I'm just kidding. But they were screaming, and
yeah.
they applauded when the movie was over. So I'm going to turn it back to you.
Yeah, so let me go into what I found exciting about the movie. We on this podcast, we tend to talk about, is this a movie that you would recommend to people? Is this something you're going to pay $10, $15, $20 to go and see in theaters? And for the majority of the movies, you and I have been saying, no, 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 don't save your money, don't do it, save your money, don't do it. And I came out of that movie and I remember you looked at me, how did you like the movie? I said, I liked it. I liked it. If I was going to see this movie, I would want to see it in, at the very least, 3D. If not going in and seeing it IMAX 3D, I would shell out $20 to see this movie because I believe that the effects in it were great. I thought they did a good job. There were several scenes where you're up high on a cliff or a mountain looking down, and I felt like, you know what? This did a good job at portraying that height. I'm in the theater thinking about, wow, if Joy was here, she would be looking at this going, this is, you know, this is bad. Like, she's afraid of heights. And I think this movie brought in a sense of realism to the depth of what you were seeing and experiencing in the worlds that was visually great. And I really enjoyed that. And so for me, it was enough of an immersive experience in that world that I would say, yeah, it's worth it. And it's funny because I went home and I was talking to Joy and I said, once this movie gets out of theaters, I probably wouldn't buy it. I probably wouldn't go out and add it to my DVD collection, but I would be willing to go and pay $20 to go see it on the IMAX, big screen, 3D, all the bells and whistles, because I think there was enough going on with the visuals and the effects to justify it. I didn't think the 3D clouded anything that was going on. I didn't think it was overwhelming. I didn't think there were – the action scenes I thought were played out well enough that you weren't going dizzy or you weren't getting sick watching them in 3D like you do with some other movies. That's where I'm going to end my positive comments on this movie. But I did enjoy it, and I would be willing to go and pay to see it.
Well, I have my comments on those elements you mentioned, the visuals and everything.
Yeah.
But I do have a question because you're saying you enjoyed it, and I too can sometimes enjoy a movie for visuals or mm-hmm. whatever. But usually I feel like there has to be something a little bit more, and where a lot of my issues lie aren't solely with visuals or the technical mm-hmm. merits that you mentioned, because I think a lot of technical work has been put in this film. How effective it was, we can discuss in a
sure.
minute. But did you at any level, saying that you enjoyed it, did you at any level, were you engaged with the story, or even in a sense of it carrying you through as a roller coaster ride?
I wanted more. From my perspective, there were too many main characters, and you were following too many main characters, so it almost felt a little too choppy. I would have rather they had taken it, and we'll talk about why I think the director chose to do it the way he did it, but I would have rather had seen one character and you followed the story through that character's eyes. There were several good characters in this story, or potentially good characters, I thought, in this story. And instead of jumping around to this one, to that one, to that one, I don't want to give spoilers away. I would have rather had said, okay, this is the one character that we are going to follow, and you're going to be experiencing everything through his lens. We talked about the fact that this is, you know, World of Warcraft is a multi-online game, and that's what you do when you play a multi-online game, is you are choosing one creature, one person, one character that you are going to embody and you are going to become, and you're following your character, who you become throughout the entire story. Now, I think the reason the director made the choice he did was because in that you have so many fans of the game who are coming in who are different characters, and so he almost set you up to follow each and every one of them at different points. And to me, that was lacking a little. I would have rather he said, okay, you're going to follow the warrior, you're going to follow the wizard, you're going to follow the orc, and I'm going to show you this experience through their eyes solely. And I think that would have helped more. But it did engage. I did engage at certain times with those characters, but there was almost too many characters to engage with all at once.
So you would say, I mean, like, to be fair, and the reason I'm kind of underlining this is because I think there may be a point here where we are, I want to create the sense for people who are into this world of Warcraft, yeah, that this movie might actually give them what they're looking for.
I think so, yeah.
To just kind of clarify with you, you're saying that, yes, you liked the visuals, you enjoyed the visuals, you were engaged by the visuals, but there was enough of a story tied to it that you did enjoy this kind of as an overall package. You saw problems, yeah, but the movie entertained you enough that if you go back and see it again, you're going to take this as a roller coaster ride. You're not going to just be sitting there staring at the screen, zoning out, essentially.
Yeah, I think so. And we talked about that. I have a friend who's interested in seeing this movie, so I will probably go and see it with him at some point. And, you know, we said last night, I think this is a movie that I'm going to have to tell him. This was before the movie started. I think I'm going to have to tell him, yeah, if you want to go see it, you're going to have to pay for my ticket, where I think I would actually be willing to shell the money out and go see it on my own.
And so from that perspective, I mean, that's a pretty good review. I mean, yeah, that's a positive go see it for, yeah, people that would enjoy.
Yeah.
Now, would you say this is for people solely that would enjoy video games and Warcraft? Or would you say people who are really into fantasy, the diehard fantasy fan, would you recommend this movie to them?
I don't think I necessarily would recommend it to the diehard fantasy fan, because Joy is one of those diehard fantasy fans. She may very well enjoy a lot of the visuals that are going on, because she does enjoy a lot of those shots and scenes and establishing moments that I think there were some of those in there that she would look at and say, that was really cool, I enjoyed that. But I don't think there was enough going on in there that she would like that. I think this is more for the diehard World of Warcraft video gamers. I think this is a movie that has done some justice to video games. I don't think it's done complete justice to video game movies, but I think it has taken it up a notch from what we're used to seeing.
So you say on the level of like a Double Dragon or Super Mario Brothers?
It's taken it up a step from there. One or two.
fair enough. Well, folks, I've done everything I can to paint Warcraft in the light that if you are coming to this and you are a fan of the video games, that you won't write me
That's right.
But I did not like this movie. As an overall experience, I did not like it. And I really, that's kind of the perspective. It's hard to really judge this as a movie in the terms that we come to acknowledge a movie and its storytelling abilities. Mm-hmm. I'll get back to that. But obviously, a lot of these summer movies are intended to be an immersive experience. And I just simply was not immersed. And there's a lot of ways that I can express that and say that. I will say that I did have a reaction. You know, my reaction was, I really don't like this. And yeah, I see what they're trying to do. I don't like their choices. I can see the effort put in. I will say I appreciate that a lot more than the Ninja Turtles and the things like that just felt pure cash grabs. This, in a lot of ways, and I could be off base about this, but I feel that they may have hurt themselves as a commercial property by being such fans of the material. That's my feeling. I'll tell you why in a minute. So I'm not throwing this off like the last three or four movies and saying that this is just a useless, cynical cash grab. I just really did not engage with it. And it was actually a little more irritating to me that didn't happen. I really was rooting for Jones, and I really wanted to kind of come to this world, and I wanted Warcraft to explain to me, in a sense, and maybe this is too much to ask, why it's its popularity. You know, make me want to go and play the video games. Now, it's not so much that it didn't make me want to go and play the video games, but what it didn't make me want to do is see any more of this world in a movie form, and it really didn't make me want to even finish watching the movie I was watching. So let's go through that a little bit. So we will deal with the things you mentioned, the visuals and everything. Yeah. I really wasn't engaged or really blown away by the visuals. I will say this about them. They are very detailed. There was a lot of effort put into this. You have these orc characters. In fact, I guess we should back up. I mean, there's not much story per se to go on. It's a very typical sort of fantasy movie, but you have a race or whole tribe of orcs living in their own world. I did like this idea that the orcs live in their own sort of universe, and they actually have to create a portal using this magic called the Fel to come through that portal and invade the world where the human being characters live.
Yes.
So you have one fantasy world invading another. It happens right off the bat, and that's essentially what's going on, a war between the two, and on both sides of the fence you have warriors, you have knights, kings, and then you have the mages, the magicians, who are sort of the people that control that ability to cross over the portal. So that's really it. I mean, it's very basic high fantasy stuff that you're dealing with. You can see how back in 94 when Warcraft came out that it was taking a lot of what we've kind of come to think of as that Tolkien-inspired fantasy world that has used that as a root base but delved out of it. You had your typical dwarf characters. I mean, really springing from like Dungeons and Dragons and that sort of thing. So that was the baseline. There's a lot of ways you can visualize that world. The World of Warcraft games is one way that the world has been visualized. The movie visualizes the world probably just about the same, and you could probably talk this a little bit more than I could, as the World of Warcraft games, while adding in a few elements that are particularly cinematic. I did notice that Jones was almost trying in a few scenes to develop a very real sense of how the camera moves around these worlds. But I think that was really underlined by the fact that the worlds do look extremely artificial. You can tell that they're going for something like James Cameron did with Avatar, creating this sort of very immersive, very hyper-realistic world where the characters don't ever look to us like they're actually physically like there, but they're almost as transcend real. They're animated, but not.
Right.
And Avatar is a storytelling experience in its writing and everything else is not a great movie. But I think as a immersive experience, I really enjoyed Avatar. It was a roller coaster ride that it wasn't until the movie was done that I was like, I just watched Fern Gully in space. You know, it wasn't, you know, Dances with Smurfs. It wasn't until after that I came to that, seeing the pterosaurs flying and their muscles rippling under the skin. There was so much work built into that. I feel like a lot of similar work was built into Warcraft, but the way the scenes are presented, they are presented not unlike cutscenes from a video game, where we're just kind of thrown into it, and our perspective is the perspective you would have if, as you said, you're playing one of these characters. So the visuals, the way scenes are presented, the way the fantastic is presented to us in this movie, is totally in a mundane way, which might be okay if you're trying to if that's really the crux of your movie. Like, if your movie is about the mundane life of orcs, you know what I mean? It's like Woody Allen's Warcraft or something. You know, that mundanity might make sense, but they want it to be a big spectacle. They want us to be wowed. And the way they introduce the magical powers, the way they introduce the orcs, they're just boom. They're right there, they're doing their thing, and they're just going through the shot in such a way that there isn't really a sense of wonder. You're like, oh, there's some orcs, there's some magic, you know, give me the dice. And for me, it was the way these things were introduced. You have a movie basically about a war between two dimensions. One race invades the other race, and the other race isn't even aware of that race until they show up on their doorstep. We have seen countless movies about alien invasions or invasions from other dimensions that give you this real sense of building up a dread, building up mystery, building up some sense of wonder. We see the orcs first, which is fine, but we know as soon as the orcs show up that they've invaded the human world. There's not even a kind of fish out of water sense of the orcs being thrust into a world they don't understand.
Right.
The humans encounter the orcs and like, oh, new creatures have showed up. Well, let's go kill them. You know, there's no sense where we are getting what would be in this situation some real sense of wonder, some real sense of danger. The characters are just there and, hey, this is our everyday world, that's fine. But when they go to another dimension, you'd expect them to be a little bit more wowed or engaged in it. So I feel like I'm just watching something that we take for granted. This looks just like the video game. This is just hop right over from the video game. So I wasn't getting the normal emotive elements I would have expected from a movie. If that makes any, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think that's fair to a certain extent. I think looking at it, what I think this did is the line between the cinematics in video games and what they're doing and what's going on in movies is blurring more and more every day. I'm in the middle of playing Uncharted 4, A Thief's End. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to more and more in that game isn't necessarily just me going through and playing it, which I enjoy thoroughly. But it's those cutscenes that are weaving a story in and out of it. And I think what this managed to do, one of the reasons why I enjoyed it was this was, 2 hours? Is that about right?
Maybe.
Yeah, about 2 hours.
Felt like a little longer.
And there are some scenes that drag, and I think that there were some editing choices that could have been done differently. There could have been some things that help to explain the movie better and to drive the story better. I would like to blame that on an over-enthusiasm, not knowing what to put in necessarily, more than just being horrible. But what I did enjoy was this felt like a 2 hour long cutscene, that, all right, I'm not going to be picking up the controller at this point, but I'm going to be watching a story that I would normally interact with in a video game setting. And that's kind of the feeling that I got and I enjoyed from this.
That's a good point. I'm actually glad that you said that and identified that as the reason that you liked it, because now I'm going to use it against you.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But it does actually highlight the frustrations I was feeling, because right. a 2 hour cutscene is not the same thing as a movie. And
right.
I think the perspective there, you were able to engage that without still having the controller where you can participate in the world. But I think it comes down to the differences, and we have to start acknowledging that they're there, I think, if we are ever going to get a movie that stands on its own and we can say, hey, that was inspired by a video game, and yet it's a perfectly good on its own movie. I think we're going to have to start understanding that the storytelling devices in these two genres,
right.
although different, I mean, although similar in many ways, are very different.
Right.
There is a larger gulf between the relationship of video games and movie storytelling, I believe, than there is between movies and television. Movies and television, you can kind of move fluidly
sure.
between the two and use many of the same. You can use the same basic mechanics in telling both stories, and you're just changing styles yeah. and scope sometimes. With video games, I think you're actually talking about different mechanics to storytelling.
Yes.
And we can go into this more. I believe next week we're going to have a podcast specifically on video games.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And in that, I really want to discuss those different kinds of storytelling. Not just that, but also the questions have been asked for years. And Roger Ebert used to get on this get off my lawn kids kind of attitude when talked about, can video games be art?
Yeah.
Now, I think that they can be, but they're going to be a different kind of art than we
yeah.
are traditionally used to as critics.
Yeah.
So the storytelling in a World of Warcraft video game needs to be both rich and detailed, but lacking, I think, to an extent, in really grounded emotive behaviors.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is, you are taking on the character. Yes, you might be really invested in the lives of some of these characters. A game like The Last of Us, telling sort of
right.
a poignant story. You can engage with those poignant stories as it goes along, but these cut scenes are filling in information that you are. The experience of the game would be completely boring if you just walked around and did actions that had no relation to the cut scene
story,
that you watch.
Right.
part of the journey, part of the even emotional journey that you experience with these characters is what you do while you're running around with that controller, while you are shooting those characters. So this, or whatever it is you're doing, right. Whether it's a space exploration game, whether it's a game like BioShock that try to make it even a little bit more, give you some autonomy that isn't really there, but a sense that you have these choices to make.
Right.
That plays into the storytelling, but if a storyteller made a video game and it bombarded you with emotional character details, emotions in every scene in terms of like, this is exactly what happened, this is how it happened, this is what will happen as a result of that action, you would have all of your sense of autonomy taken away. You would think it was a terrible game. You're like, that was nothing but cutscenes, or that was nothing but storytelling.
Right.
I sat around and I did very little, because you don't get a chance to make the narrative your own the way you do in a video game. In a video game, it's wanting to bring you into the ride and let you take control of it. A movie wants to bring you in and take control of you and bring you into a world and unspool this story on you. And watching Warcraft from the perspective of someone wanting to be told a story, I felt like I had all the cutscenes, all the like surface level mythology and information I needed, but there was no connectivity. Mm. I wanted to be able to pick up a controller and engage it because I didn't think there was anything else for me.
Right.
It's a really harsh thing to say. It reminded me of the Star Wars prequels a little bit, both in visual style and in the sense that the actors in this movie. It's interesting because we talked about a few weeks ago Preacher, and you have Dominic Cooper and Ruth Negga who show up there. They actually show up as the king and his wife, the king and queen in Warcraft. And honestly, if I had not seen them in other places, if I hadn't seen them on Preacher, I wouldn't think they had much charisma at all. I've seen Paula Patton, who plays the female half-orc, who we'll talk about aspect of her character in a minute, but she is an actress who I've seen do very well in other films, the Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. But here, it just felt flat. It kind of felt like a sci-fi original with a bigger budget.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can see that. And I'll concede a lot of those points because we are, you know, one of the things that drove me nuts, and I said this to you, you know, as we were getting out, was the makeup on her specifically kept fading from green to skin color, and
it was surprisingly bad.
Yeah, and so that was driving me nuts.
And she had
throughout the movie
her tusks. She has smaller tusks because she's a half orc. She they look like the plastic teeth you'd buy at the Dollar Tree, like vampire teeth.
Yes.
I mean, they're that bad, really.
Yes.
And it's inexplicable because so much of the detail on the orcs, and there's the big main orc, I think, is it Durotan?
Durotan, yeah.
And he's kind of the big main orc character. And I do concede to what you said about wanting to follow not necessarily only one character, but one or two characters, three characters.
Right.
The Lord of the Rings had a nice built-in thing where they're a fellowship. They're going to journey together.
Right.
But eventually it splits off. And Jackson is able, for the most part, to be able to follow Frodo and Sam and follow the rest of the fellowship and not make us feel like we're being catapulted back and forth.
Right.
He was maybe a little less successful with that in the Hobbit movies, but I thought, particularly that first trilogy, he did a nice job. Here, you're just catapulted back and forth, and it might be that multiplayer thing where, hey, there's someone playing a game over here, and there's someone playing a game over there. There were a couple performances. Ben Foster, who plays the mage character, who's sort of the guardian, and they just call him, he's the guardian. We don't know why he's a guardian. We don't really know what exactly he was doing before.
Right.
He's just the guardian. And he hits almost a few times some interesting notes. Ben Foster is always, he's an interesting actor. You've seen him in a lot of stuff, maybe without knowing it. He was the villain in a 310 to Yuma remake.
Yep.
He played Angel in X-Men Last Stand.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a thankless job. And
it's a thankless movie.
This is another thankless job. And Foster's a really interesting actor, though, I think. He almost looks like the weird love child of like Christoph Waltz and like Ryan Gosling. Not that they would ever have a love child, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
And he's an interesting actor, and he tries a couple times to bring something into this. It's just not there.
Yeah.
Just, again, to me, this felt like a supplement to the video game. It gave me no reason as an outsider, not because I didn't understand the world, but because it didn't make the world compelling to me. It gave me no real reason to care. The fell is there. It's dark magic. We know that. Let's move on. I wanted to know more about it. Why did they turn to it? How did they turn to it? What compelled them to think it was a better option than other things they could do? We know that the orc homeworld is dying, but where? How do we make this jump to use this power and invade the other world? We don't know those things. And I'm sure someone's going to write me and say, well, you learned that in the video game. But I shouldn't need to know that coming into this film.
And I think that's one of the things that we are going to see time and time again with video games being translated into movies. I think this is going to be a movie. And let's just be fair and real and honest. Not every movie is for every person. I think this did the best job at transforming a video game that gamers are passionate about and bringing it on the silver screen as something that they would enjoy. And that's something we haven't seen before.
I'd like to agree with you. I think what they did was transplant the video game to the screen. I don't think that they translated it to a movie. I think that's where we would disagree. Like, I don't think it's a successful story. It doesn't stand on its own as a movie.
And I would agree, but I think what it does, I think it assumes a lot of things. And I have issues, and normally I have issues with things like that. I do. I take issue if I'm, I watched the first Twilight movie. I took issue with the fact that I think it presupposed a lot of things that I was supposed to know about that world. And it just, it didn't really bring it alive for me. But there were many people who were, you know, fans of the books who saw it and loved it. And they were, you know, great fans of it. I think people who are fans of the Warcraft video game are going to see this and enjoy it.
And I think you're probably right. Now, I ask this too. You have played the video games. Do you think that your experience with this would have been different had you not played this?
I don't think so. And part of that is because the experience that I've had with the video games has been limited. Okay. My experience with World of Warcraft as a video game has been limited because it is an online playing game that you pay to play. And so I've played in various capacities over friends' houses and things like that, gone onto their accounts and done some things. So I've been exposed to the world on a base level. But I've played many other games similar to this. And, you know, I'm a video game freak. I love video games. I enjoyed it for being able – again, Double Dragon, Super Mario Brothers – horrible movies. Now, Double Dragon, I enjoyed for a different reason, and we'll talk about that. But
we don't need to talk about that.
Super Mario Brothers was absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. And there was on no level.
It's funny
did
to watch
I
it at least
that.
Once, though, because it's such a train wreck. I have a relative who actually thinks it's like an underrated classic because he views it as like something on the level of like Airplane. Like he sees it as a spoof. He doesn't understand people were trying when they made that movie.
Serious.
That's right.
But what I think this did was, I think finally for a gamer. And I will qualify that because I had a friend who asked me today and was saying, you know, what did you think of the movie? And I told him, I was about to answer, and he's like, now, keep in mind, I've played World of Warcraft a lot. And I said, I think you'll like it. And I explained to him what I thought the movie did well without giving away spoilers, what we've talked about here. And he said, oh, cool, you know, and I think he's planning on going to see it. I thought this did a good job at bringing that video game. Again, it's hard. It's hard to talk about what's going on with a lot of these things because video games have, in their own right, become similar to movies, in my opinion.
Similar, but I think not the same.
Right, And so when you're looking at this as a supplement to a video game, and I think you're right, I think this is a supplement to a video game.
And I think if you did the other, like again, if you went the other way and did the same thing, on a video game. Someone who loves movies might love to sit there and watch all these actors act out scenes, and I just press a button and they talk again, you know?
Right.
But a video gamer would be disappointed. They wouldn't understand. They would say, why is this in this venue? And I just kind of, I feel a little disappointed that we even have to have this conversation where we say, I recommend this for gamers, but not really for people who like movies.
Right, right.
And I just don't think that's the way it should be.
Sure.
And again, this is me seeing that. If I had seen it and was engaged and still came away saying, it was kind of like a video game, that's fine. But I really, this is not me putting my theory of video games and movies first and saying that's why I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy the movie. And then I sort of looked and said, well, what's not working here?
Right.
And for me, that's it. And I kind of feel like do you think this is going to be a success? It's already starting to be a success overseas, I see. I don't think it's going to be a big hit here. But I don't know.
Yeah, it really, honestly, this is going to be
it's huge in China right now.
Right. I mean, because it's generating a lot of negative press, and a lot of times a lot of negative press will compel people to go and see a movie like this.
Yeah, it didn't do anything for Gods of Egypt or Jack and the Giant Killer.
That's true. But I mean, really, 50 Shades of Grey got poor reviews and
that was a whole different beast in itself, because the fan base there was inexplicably huge and was going no matter what. And I think you're going to have the same thing with Warcraft, not with the huge, but with the idea that they're going to go, a certain group of people that don't care anything necessarily about movies are going to see this thing because they enjoy the product it sprang from.
Right. And so that's where I think it's going to be questionable. Just how many people are fans of World of Warcraft who are willing to go ahead and spend the money and go see it.
But I'll say this. I'm just reading this article that says even if it bombs here, it still could be a blockbuster. In China, on its first day, $46 million. Now, that is beating out the record that was Avengers Age of Ultron that got $28.3 million. For China,
wow.
46, that's the opening day. That is huge.
Yeah.
And I can almost see how that movie could play overseas in a different way and maybe be more successful.
Sure.
I've certainly seen some films that, you know, some of the fantasy films, this is putting the martial arts genre aside, but seeing China attempt some of the movies recently, Monster Hunt and things like that, their movies often resemble video games.
Yeah.
So maybe what I'm trying to say here is I don't think this is successful as a movie. I think it's sort of right to acknowledge that, to say that someone who's going for a movie experience isn't going to enjoy it, but to turn around and say that if you're listening to this and you're the World of Warcraft fan, I'm saying the things I saw up there on screen, you were probably going to get something out of this movie if you're really into it.
Yeah.
And you were going to go regardless of what either one of us says anyway.
Right, right.
But I will say Duncan Jones really cares about this world. He's put a lot of effort into it. I just wish I could be enthusiastic about that.
And to be fair, I will. You know, we talked about there are issues, there are problems that I saw. I think the editing sequence, I think you're right. I think this had major issues with the way it was cut, with the way it was edited. I think there were major issues. There's one scene where they're kind of riding out of the city, and the king turns to a little boy and a little girl and says to the little boy, I wouldn't trust any other man to protect the kingdom, and we have no clue who this kid is.
I thought they were his kids.
Well, I thought
so
too,
eventually but there's they think they turn out to be, but I don't even remember.
But there was no mention of them. There was no seeing them before that scene. And all of a sudden, like, the weight of the kingdom has just been placed on this little kid's shoulders.
And I'm not going to go into spoilers, but there are a lot of events that happen in this movie. There's a lot of character, I don't really think it works as character building, but momentum to characters. We see characters on screen for a very long time, and they seem like they're going to pay off something, and then they don't.
Yeah.
Their actions in the movie almost have no consequence.
Right. Right.
And that's all I want to say about it, but there's some of that. And I'm like, that kind of felt like the video game. Hey, you went through 8 levels, but you didn't get past level 9.
Right, right.
And so there's a sense of that I just wasn't satisfying to me as a story.
Yeah, and I agreed with you when we were talking about last night. I still agree with you. I think that there were things that were done needlessly in this movie that shouldn't have. They didn't further the story at all. They didn't really serve a purpose other than to just be there.
Okay, so we have talked about every time we do a movie and I don't enjoy it, I try to throw out something that is basically like any something you can go check out instead. A good option, if you will. A few weeks ago, I think we were talking TV, and we were talking about Jim Caviezel and the movies that Jim Caviezel has done. Mm-hmm. So if you are someone looking for a sword and sorcery battle epic movie that you haven't seen, and we all know we've seen Lord of the Rings, you got the Harry Potters, you've seen all these movies, you've got the 80s films that we all know about, Conan the Barbarian, I'm going to suggest Outlander. Yes. Again, this is not the Starz Scottish time travel series. This is Outlander, an action film from 2008, I believe.
That sounds about right.
Action science fiction movie. It has all of those sorts of battles and skirmishes that you'd expect. It is lower budget. It has special effects that border on a little bit higher than the Sci-Fi Channel, but yeah, maybe not that much. This tells the Beowulf story.
Yes.
We talked about it before. The space explorer crash lands. Comes to Earth, but it's Earth during the Viking times. Mm-hmm. And there's an explanation made for how Earth fits into this greater kind of cosmic experience, and why this humanoid is on a planet that looks undeveloped and is back in like the medieval ages. And then there's the creature that was on his ship that sneaks out and starts to strike up the Beowulf and Grendel story. And yes, we know this because characters come in like John Hurt, who's playing, yes, King Hrothgar, and you have all these. Ron Perlman shows up as a big burly Viking guy with like double axes. And the movie goes through these paces, and it is unapologetically a throwback to 80s sword and sorcery, yes, kind of movies. It's silly, it's ridiculous, but it's fun. It's got a cool score. You can kind of get into it, yes, on a B-movie level, but it is exciting in places. It's totally silly. It's every bit as silly as Warcraft.
Yes.
It takes time to kind of kid itself a little bit. It has a real energy to it that I was surprised by. It's a movie I would watch again. I wouldn't make excuses for, oh, well, I'm just seeing this for the visuals or for this. Mm-hmm. It could easily translate into a video game. It has sword fights. It, mm-hmm, has giant monster leaping out, mm-hmm, but it carried me through. I kind of got into some of the performances, as goofy as they were. Mm-hmm. I got into the story, as silly as it was, and I had a great time, and it, yeah, made me want to watch it again. You know, yeah, maybe not that instant, but as a, hey, you know, if that's a movie and I see it on television, I'm going to sit down and, yeah, watch it. I bought the Blu-ray because,
yes,
it,
yes,
was a fun experience from beginning to end. I didn't feel the need to apologize for it. It's called Outlander. I don't think it's on any of the streaming services. It's kind of notoriously kind of weird and hard to find in the fact that I don't see it many places.
Yeah.
You can get a copy of it probably for rather cheap, though. Mm-hmm. Probably even on Blu-ray, it's probably not more than $10,
yeah,
I'd imagine.
I would think it's
so a fun movie, and if you're into that, you want that feeling of what was it like to sit down and play, you know, the feeling you had when you played D&D back, right, in the 80s. Didn't get that from Warcraft. I got it from Outlander.
Yeah, and I agree. Outlander was fantastic. I would highly recommend it, too. I also have the Blu-ray version of Outlander. Thoroughly enjoy it. There's a cool drinking game that goes on in there where they're running across shields and drinking beer.
That's totally fun.
Yeah, it is. It's a blast, and I agree. Definitely worth your time to check it out and see it. So, all right. Well, we're going to go ahead. Real quick before we forget, we have to announce the winner of our contest.
Oh, that's right.
For the retweets.
Right.
So we're going to go ahead and do that right now. Put all of our names into the random generator, and we come out with Chris Ragsdale. Chris Ragsdale, you have won the Die Hard, what is it, Quintilogy?
Quintilogy, yeah. So the Die Hard collector set, every movie except the fifth one, you're not missing anything.
Yeah.
And to give a quick shout out to Chris, because I do recognize Chris's name because I see him on Twitter all the time. This guy is constantly like retweeting. He's always connecting with us, talking to us. He even created a few weeks ago, I think, when we were finishing this up, I saw a GIF where he had Jim from The Office pumping his fist in,
yes,
the air,
yes,
with a tagline,
yes,
another pop culture ninja episode. So Chris, he's just not a name out of ad. He's a fan, and we appreciate you, Chris. And I will get you contact us. Let us give us your information, and I will get that copy of the Die Hard collection out to you. It is on Blu-ray.
Yep, and that information, popcultninja@gmail.com. Also, we want to announce our next contest coming up. This is going to be a two-week-long contest. So for those of you who may be behind in episodes, maybe you're like, man, I'm always 1 week short on the contest. This is going to go for 2 weeks. You can retweet. You can repost on your Facebook page, or you can write a review on iTunes. We're going to do all three. We're going to do two prize giveaways. So we'll pick two names from the people who are included in this pool. So again, iTunes review, a Facebook repost or a retweet. If you do one of those things in the next 2 weeks, you are going to be put into our drawing and you'll win some really cool prizes at the end of the 2 weeks. So the contest is going to go ahead and end on the 23rd of June. So we're looking forward to announcing the winners of those. If you do those things, because we're going on all three platforms, please go ahead and just email us at popcultninja@gmail.com.
Yeah, contact us some way, whether it's through the Facebook page or Twitter or through the email. Just let us know that you've done it, because we're going to try to look, but we might miss it otherwise. So please do that.
All right, we're going to go ahead and sign off. Hope you enjoyed. Catch you later.
Take care.